We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Welcome to the Solid Verbal. The Solid
Verbal. Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
I've heard so many players say, well, I want to be happy. You want to be happy for a day? Eat a steak.
It's that woo woo!
And now, Dan and Ty.
Welcome back to the Solid Verbal, boys and girls. My name is Ty Hildenbrand, that fine gentleman over there, the one, the only, the incomparable, still incomparable after all these years. That's you, Dan Rubenstein, sir. How are you?
Hey, I'm good. This is a fun week for me. This is a lot of cooking and baking and college football and eating and family time. I know some people look at the Thanksgiving holiday with like equal parts excitement and dread, but I'm just sort of in, man. I'm going to eat well. I like my family. I'm spending all the time in the Midwest this year. You know, some years, some more normal years, I go to the West Coast, but I mean, it's supposed to be relatively nice today, about 50 degrees. Going to get outside if I can. I can't complain, Ty. And we got a ton of great questions that we're going to go through. We have news to discuss. This is my favorite week, Ty. This is my favorite week of college football. It's my favorite week of eating. And here we are squarely in the Dan zone. That sounded wrong now that I hear it. Now that I hear it out loud, I apologize. I didn't mean it.
Well, we welcome everybody.
Yeah.
Who is downloading, who is listening, in some cases watching live. I'll talk about that momentarily. Don't forget to go on out to our website, solidverbal.com. Subscribe, follow the show. All that stuff really helps. You can also go to solidgiveaway.com. Solidgiveaway.com is where we are giving away a signed RG3 mini helmet. If you go to the website, solidgiveaway.com, you can see what it looks like. I am told that we received the helmet.
Oh,
it's in good shape. We've got it. We can send it out to whoever
wins. Wonderful news.
We're going to draw that winner after conference championship weekend, next weekend. So you still got about a week and a half or so to get your name in that hat, which we will draw and we will announce on December the 8th, I believe. So go on out to solidgiveaway.com. SolidSaturday.com is the web address for the stream that you and I are going to be doing on Saturday, to get you all ready for the big game between Ohio State and Michigan, the Bedlam game, still called the Bedlam game, still the Bedlam game for now. We'll get to that momentarily. So big weekend of college football, very consequential weekend of college football is before us here in week 13. Yeah, please.
Can I channel my inner Sean Parker via the social network? It's not the Bedlam game. It's just Bedlam.
Bedlam.
Just Bedlam.
Yeah.
Just like lose the. Just Facebook. That's it.
I'm excited for that Bedlam game. What else do we have? What else do we have?
We have your boy, Jimmy Franks.
Yeah?
We have news to discuss. We have a bunch of really great questions. We have rankings to discuss. Solid Saturday, every Saturday at 11 a.m. Eastern, where we download and upload our thoughts on the games that are about to kick off. Now, obviously, this week we have a bunch of Friday action, but we're still doing Solid Saturday. So we'll be, I guess, equal parts or some combo of parts discussing the Thursday and Friday action and previewing the Saturday action. Does that sound right?
That is correct. So, yeah. Again, one more time, solidsaturday.com. We would encourage you to hop on over and join the stream. Many of you are listening to this on Friday. This is part of the show that will be released on Friday. But for our Patreon Verballers, they are getting a sneak early peek of this show and the second half of this show, which is going to be more questions. We're going to go through news. We're going to get into questions. We're going to continue with questions. Our Patreon Verballers get access to all of it.
Yeah, no, the first half is the turkey. And then if you're a Patreon subscriber on Verballers.com, that's where you're getting the turducken, buddy.
Yeah.
That's where you're getting the stuffed with chicken and duck. That's where you get
you ever
the
have
full
a turducken?
No, I have not. I'm not a big, even though I went there, I'm not a big duck guy. I like things fried in duck fat.
Not a big duck guy.
I don't order duck when I have the opportunity. I'm just,
what
it's not my thing.
What a fraud.
Yeah. Sorry to tell you. I don't like hunting ducks. I don't like eating ducks. I like looking at them, but that's my thing. Sorry. Should we get into some news?
Let's do news. We have breaking news, Dan.
Boop, 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 boop. At least we did last night. Boop, boop, boop.
Yeah. Updated college football playoff rankings were released on Tuesday evening. Again, many of you are listening to this here show on Friday, but it still warrants mentioning that Georgia is still your top dog. No pun intended. We have Ohio State moving up two spots. They leapfrog Alabama. They are now number two. Alabama still in that top four. No reason not to put them there. They are at number three. And of course, the centerpiece of the conversation for the last few days running has been the fact that at long last, the Cincinnati Bearcats have eked their way into the top four. They are followed by Michigan at five, Notre Dame at six, Oklahoma State at seven, and then we crack into two lost territory with Baylor and Ole Miss at eight and nine, Oklahoma in the top 10 at number 10. So, okay.
Yeah.
Let's break it down. Let's talk it through. I don't know any great surprises here. We, I think, alluded to it on our recap show, that perhaps on the strength, the 56-7, victory over Michigan State, we could see the committee elevating Ohio State over Alabama. That's no big surprise.
Yep.
And I guess it wouldn't be a surprise either that at this point, Cincinnati would find their way into the top five, given the fact, top four, given the fact that Oregon lost on the road to Utah. Any surprises here, Dan? Anything jump out to you in looking at this batch of rankings?
Not especially. I mean, where did Oregon fall to? 11. They fell down eight spots.
Yep.
I suppose that's, I mean, look, I think certain things are true at the same time of how the committee is thinking. The committee absolutely did not want to, if they didn't need to, put Cincinnati in the top four. It had reached the point where they needed to. And the committee had to keep Oregon ahead of Ohio State or right there with Ohio State as long as Oregon kept winning. Because even though Oregon had not been winning with sheer force and with impressive scoring, and then as soon as they lost, they're like, all right, get out of here. Get out of here.
Yeah, yeah.
And so that's why Oregon, I think, fell as precipitously as they did. Oregon's not a playoff team, and for large swaths of the season have not looked to be on the level of some of those other teams. And you could say the same about Cincinnati and some of the opponents and performances that they've put forth, but certainly they answered some questions with how they performed against SMU. And so it's nice to see Cincinnati there. I still have my doubts because, you know, I'm a big believer in the concept of winter wonders, which, by the way, that's our
more to come.
Game,
more
right?
to come.
More to come. Winter wonders. But the way we define winter wonders is especially having those receivers that force defenses to be honest, that force gravitational attention from defenses. And we've seen it from Alabama, obviously, over the years. Perhaps we'll see it from Georgia as they get healthier out wide as we near playoff time and SEC championship time. We've certainly seen it from Ohio State over the years, Clemson over the years. And that's the difference to me between teams like Ohio State, Alabama, and Wisconsin, right? Guys that are just like, they win in a very specific way, but they don't have those electric playmakers on offense. That's what concerns me about Cincinnati if we're looking at them big picture and comparing them against those teams. But from what they've done this year and not losing and beating some interesting teams, including a double-digit win over Notre Dame on the road, they have to be there. To me, yeah. They have to be there. There's not the case for Michigan over Cincinnati. Michigan's at number five, right?
Michigan's five.
I think it's kind of suspect. So I have Cincinnati comfortably in there. I mean, for whatever my opinion is worth to you, I think it makes total sense.
If Cincinnati wins out, they're in. They're in.
I think
and
so.
I think, look, you can. There are two ways to look at it. You can be a Cincinnati enthusiast, as many mm-hmm. of our Verballers are, gung-ho on Cincinnati making the playoff. If that is you, you win out, you're in. And you have had a really good year.
Mm-hmm.
Haven't really done anything wrong, save for a few games over the last 6 weeks or so where others felt you should have won by more. But by and large, right. You're still undefeated. You win out. I think you're in. If you're even a sarcastic Cincinnati observer at this point, you have to look at the landscape of college football in the top 10 and say, okay, even if I don't think Cincinnati is good enough to be in that top four, who else should we put there? Just looking at records and looking mm-hmm. at how this thing has unfolded down the stretch, who else would we put above them? You're not going to put Notre Dame above them. They beat Notre Dame. You shouldn't put Notre Dame above them. Ohio State and Michigan are going to play this week. One of those teams is going to get bounced. Georgia and Alabama is going to play. In all likelihood, Alabama gets bounced, in my view. So we're just running out of teams, man, I think is my point, that you could put above Cincinnati. And again, I stand by it. If they win out, they should be in.
Yeah, and they'll have what? Houston in the
Yeah, which
American
is a good win, by the way.
Which would be a good win. And look, and the team's looking in, right? So what happens if Michigan beats Ohio State? Michigan's in. And it doesn't necessarily supplant Cincinnati, because Ohio State has two losses, and to put Ohio State with two losses in over Cincinnati makes very little sense. A non-divisional champ in Ohio State, by the way. So then you look at Oklahoma State and Notre Dame, and if Oklahoma State were believed in more, they would have been up higher in the rankings to start. And they've actually distanced themselves. Their loss isn't a terrible loss on the road at Iowa State, and Notre Dame loses that sort of tiebreaker in my mind with Cincinnati if you're comparing resumes and schedules, and they have some common opponents, or at least one common opponent, but you know, Cincinnati went to South Bend and beat them.
They won.
And if you're going to question Cincinnati's credentials in separating themselves from lesser opponents, you can look at Notre Dame and say, well, they're Toledo-ish. They're Virginia Tech-ish, right? You can make similar arguments for lower level programs that Notre Dame didn't separate itself from. So the Oklahoma State case is interesting if Cincinnati loses and we're comparing Oklahoma State to, say, Notre Dame, right? Because if Cincinnati loses, they're out. So then you're saying, okay, well, Notre Dame is not going to play in a conference championship game, and they're finishing the season out with Georgia Tech and Stanford, and like who is Notre Dame's signature win? North Carolina, unranked North Carolina team? And then you look at Oklahoma State, and you say, well, they won their conference, and maybe they comfortably beat Oklahoma and Baylor to finish out their season. I think the argument for Oklahoma State over Notre Dame is pretty sound.
Well, down the stretch, it's pretty sound. Notre Dame's signature
That's
win
true.
In this thought experiment would be Wisconsin. Wisconsin, by the way, who keeps winning and keeps moving up, and that will bode well for anybody who has played Wisconsin, despite the fact that it looked really bad early on for them.
Yep.
I agree with you on Oklahoma State. If Oklahoma State ends up winning out, Oklahoma State should get the nod over Notre Dame. And I think it will come down to Oklahoma State or Notre Dame. If the way this thing looks like it's going to be mapped out holds, if Georgia knocks out Alabama, if Ohio State knocks out Michigan, if Oklahoma State wins out, they'll have two top 10 wins, right?
Yeah.
They'll beat Oklahoma, they'll beat Baylor.
We could have a chaotic scenario in which Michigan beats Ohio State, Georgia beats Alabama. We could have a bunch of two-loss teams. If Cincinnati loses, then what do you do?
It's going to get wild. I do think there is plenty of opportunity here for it to get wild. Every year around this time, the people whose teams are out of it start game planning. How potentially could this thing just break? What would need to happen in order for this thing to break? We can detail those before we do the Week 14 Conference Championship preview show, but I do think there is plenty of latitude here for things to go off the rails. For example, if Michigan beats Ohio State this week, I don't know how likely that is. It's only an 8.5 point spread at time of recording. That could make waves. If the winner of that game ends up going to the conference championship game against Wisconsin and loses, that
and
could
loses.
Make waves.
Yeah.
Right. Georgia and Alabama. If Alabama were to knock off Georgia, that could make waves. Like, there's plenty of things.
Well, no,
that
if Alabama knocks off Georgia, that's the actual best possible scenario for the SEC.
For the SEC, because then you get two teams.
Yeah.
In. But
right.
I'm just saying there's plenty of possibility here for things to still go off the rails. And even though it seems like we're still dealing with a lot of the usual suspects at the top, there is plenty that could still go wrong. So chaos is still on the menu.
Sure.
I don't want to dissuade anyone from feeling optimistic about the chaotic possibilities of the final 2 weeks of the season here. But at least for now, Cincinnati in the top four, I think if they win out, they're in. It's good news
sure.
for Luke Fickell. Good news for that program. I think it ultimately comes down to Notre Dame and Oklahoma State, but a lot of football yet to be played. So we'll see.
Man, we could have a situation in which we have a playoff that features Georgia, Alabama, Cincinnati, and Oklahoma State, right?
Yeah.
Michigan wins and Cincinnati. Yeah. So if we, in that scenario, we'd probably separate Georgia and Alabama, right? They wouldn't play each other in the first round. They wouldn't play the SEC championship game and then immediately play again their next game. So we'd have Alabama and Georgia playing the SEC championship game, each playing Oklahoma, Cincinnati in the semis, and then playing once again for maybe the lowest rated college football national championship of the modern era.
Yeah,
we also
could potentially have the battle for Ohio between Ohio State and Cincinnati.
Totally. And they played 2 years ago, I believe. Yeah.
In a semifinal, which would be kind of cool.
Yep.
Thing is starting to come into focus. We do have, I would say, a good seven teams here.
Sure.
That are potentially in the running for this thing here. Elsewhere in college football, James Franklin cashing in.
Yes.
James Franklin's name had been talked about a bunch of places. USC was the most obvious. I saw his hat was in the ring at LSU, at Florida, at just like every opening. James Franklin's name was in the running, probably by virtue of the fact that he's got a good agent who knows how to leverage
well,
that.
Switched. He switched this year, right? He switched from Trace Armstrong to Jimmy Sexton.
He did. So he was definitely leveraging his situation as best he could. In so doing, he now has a 10-year contract extension to remain coach at Penn State. It is officially a 10-year, $75 million guaranteed extension to stay with Penn State through the 2031 season. But there are plenty of incentives that could escalate that number a little bit further. Also, as part of this move, there's going to be a big renovation, about a $50 million renovation to the football building to further invest in that football program. So a big deal for Penn State, a big deal for James Franklin. I was skeptical that it would happen. I had heard for weeks that it was in the makings.
Yeah,
I was unsure as to whether or not he would make that move and sign on for an additional 10 years. Personally, I think James Franklin's stock had gone down,
mm-hmm.
given the way the season had gone. I'm not wholly confident that it was his first choice to stay at State College for a decade.
Yep.
But given the structure of this deal, I think it's pretty apparent that if he should choose to leave in, say, 3 or 4 years, that would still be something that is very much in the cards for him. So big deal for James Franklin, big deal for Penn State to retain him. I think if you are looking at this just in terms of what it means in the short term, what it means in the long term, Penn State's got some awesome recruiting classes that are in the pipeline. And we saw almost immediately upon the news of this getting out that Drew Allaire, one of their top flight quarterback recruits, tweeted out about it. And I think this will hold together that recruiting class nicely. It will continue the momentum that they had built up on the recruiting trail and hopefully, you know, maintain some continuity here instead of having to hit the reset button and start over. So good news, I think, for Penn State. I know there are a lot of Franklin skeptics out there. I'm not saying I'm not one of them. I do think that this is a pretty good move for him, though. I'm happy that they retained him.
I can't even count how many Citrus Bowls Penn State has coming up in their future. Look, they almost have a top 90 offense this year in points per drive. Penn State is right there with schools like San Diego State and Iowa. Yeah, I hesitate to say it. I think James Franklin's a good coach, and get your money however you can get your money. It's fine. You're worth what people are willing to pay you. But part of me does wonder if Penn State has sort of hit its ceiling with Ohio State performing the way it has, with Michigan bouncing back the way we think it is, and with Michigan State ascending like we think they are in the process of doing. And look, he can leave. He can still leave in 2 or 3 years, right? His buyout is not crazy. It's not a $20 million buyout. It goes down in successive years from, like, what did you say, 12 to 8 to 6?
Yep.
So this isn't a wild situation financially for Penn State in terms of what they're on the hook for. But I really do wonder if this was a situation of Penn State looking at the landscape and saying to themselves, we don't want to start over. This is a terrible year to try and find a coach.
It's a hard year.
Were positive, like Luke Fickell or Matt Rhule was going to come to State College or something like that, if James Franklin were to leave for USC or some other job, then it's one of those things where I think schools are a little bit tentative as for throwing their hat in the ring, as we saw Nebraska do. We're just like, man, this is a coach's market right now.
Oh,
and
yeah.
The Penn State job, while an excellent one at a major place, is less so when competing against USC and LSU and whatever else may still Florida and whatever else may come open.
No, so, for sure. And I heard on the Audible, the show that our friends Stu Mandel and Bruce Feldman do over at The Athletic. And, you know, I think it was Stu who brought up the point. There aren't enough good coaches to go around right now.
No.
There are so many big openings. And, of course, they will be filled. There's not going to be a vacancy going into the 2022 season. But in terms of what we would consider good top flight coaches that can take these jobs, it does seem like there aren't enough at this point of guys who are willing to move and maybe take those roles. So, yeah, if you're Penn State, I mean, of course you'd love to get a Luke Fickell or a Matt Rhule or somebody of that caliber. These are names that you and I have been hearing for months now, right? Unless you know for sure that it's going to happen, don't put yourself in the situation where you might have to hit the reset button and end up like South Carolina did with Will Muschamp. You know, like, play it safe. You know you've got a good recruiting class coming in. Give it some time. Well, we could talk about the Penn State stuff later. I don't mind the move. I know it's a big price tag. I think it was a smart move to retain him at this point. So he's going to be sticking around in State College for a while. I saw Jay Paterno voted against it. Jay Paterno. Okay.
That means they must be doing something right.
He of Spread HD fame, Jay Paterno. Just go away, Jay, but okay.
I'm always a little skeptical, and I don't know if this fully fits James Franklin, but when you look at, like, the coaches making the most money and the coaches at the biggest places, like, who is that quarterback that you recruited and developed, right? Who is that guy that you brought in or brought in from the transfer portal, and it was a perfect fit, and really he thrived? And that, like, if James Franklin's offensive legacy is Trace McSorley, it's pretty good. Maybe his offensive legacy is hiring Joe Moorhead, I guess. I don't know. And so that to me is worrisome. And, you know, Jimbo has Jameis, you know, in terms of recent. That's, he doesn't have it at A&M quite yet. You know, Kellen Mond was not recruited by Jimbo and brought in by Jimbo. But, and that's sort of what concerns me about Mario Cristobal, too, who might be in line to be getting a Jumbo extension if some, you know, if LSU or Florida or Miami or something comes after him. Who is Mario Cristobal? Like, it's one of those things that concerns me. You can say the same on a certain level about Brian Kelly, though I think Ian Book was a good quarterback, a good college quarterback. That's always, to me, like, who is that quarterback that you're like, I am capable of bringing in this guy and having him thrive?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, anyway, they got the most out of Trace McSorley. Trace McSorley was there around the same time, at the same time as Saquon Barkley, Miles Sanders. That was when Penn State still had a running game. They have not had a running game.
Mm-hmm.
And that's part of the problem. They're still getting good wide receiver talent. They've got a great recruiting class coming in.
So, all right. Yeah, it's always the next guy at Penn State. The next QB. That's
it's always the next guy everywhere, dude.
Drew Allaire. Come on,
it's
folks.
It's the next guy everywhere. This guy is college football, not just Penn State. James Franklin sticking around.
Yeah, that's all. Okay.
Mike Gundy saying he doesn't know if Bedlam's going to continue. He doesn't think Bedlam will continue after Oklahoma leaves for the SEC. This is kind of continuing in the long line of traditional backbiting over the loss of a rivalry, right? So the other one that comes to mind is the Texas A&M thing. A&M leaves for the SEC. There's a lot of back and forth as to whose fault it is that the rivalry is no more. We saw something similar in recent years, I think, with Penn State and Pitt, right? They were each kind of blaming each other for, we're
sure.
not playing. Whose fault is it? So
we had backyard brawl. We had border war. We've had a bunch of these instances. Yeah.
Unfortunately, the rivalry is one of the things being left to the side, kicked to the curb, if you will.
Yeah.
In light of this new age of conference realignment and big money moves from programs to go from one conference to another. It would be a shame if Bedlam were not a thing.
Of course
that
it would be.
That would be an absolute shame, and I hope that they would find a way to continue it, but I guess Gundy would know better than most where things stand on that front.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's just naturally in these situations, which is, there's just going to be sour grapes. This is not the last of it, and Oklahoma State is, they feel left out, that Texas and Oklahoma, which were the branding bell cows, the Big 12, now leaving for the SEC. Because honestly, schools like Texas and Oklahoma, they're so poor. They need those dollars, man. They don't have that cash.
Yeah.
They really need. And so now we get like Oklahoma, South Carolina. We get Texas Vanderbilt. Hooray. Instead of Bedlam, instead of Texas A&M, which I guess could come back. We'll see what happens if, you know, the SEC breaks into pods. It's just a bummer. As somebody who squarely looks at weeks 1 through 14 as college football and not the conference realignment and element of it, the recruiting element of it, I know it's important, but like this is what I love about the sport, and just seeing it go into, you know, administrative places for cash. It's just a bummer. I love the Bedlam game. I made a North Korean video about it in 2012 or something like that. It's my favorite. Sorry.
We'll have to make sure we post that. We got to post that again so that people can get to it.
Oh, that's true. That's this week, right? Yeah.
It's this week. Yeah. All right. So we'll find out what the future of Bedlam looks like. Obviously, we've got a big Bedlam game being played on Saturday night, which will have huge implications, I should say.
Sure.
On where things go in the Big 12 and the playoff that we talked about earlier. Elsewhere, in the Florida State-Florida game, Emory Jones is out.
Saw that. It's an Anthony Richardson time.
Can you very quickly detail for our listening audience, our captive listening audience, who will be playing for Florida or who won't be playing for Florida this coming week?
Well, Florida does not have a head coach, does not have an offensive coordinator because Dan Mullen was both. They don't have a defensive coordinator. The offensive line coach is gone. The starting quarterback is gone. So, I don't know. Florida State has it made, presumably, although the top of Anthony Richardson's ceiling is interesting. But I still believe the Gators are the 1-2-3 Cancun team of the week. So, man, it's just a bummer. It's just a bummer to be on that team. Like, you think about like the actual human element of the time element. If you're a Florida player, right, you put in all that work in the offseason, the brutal summers, all the studying, fall camp. You start the season off in an encouraging way. You're blowing teams out. Anthony Richardson comes in, and he looks like he's the electric future. And then it just all falls off. It all dissipates. It all collapses. And it's not that it's all for naught, right? Because you're playing for your teammates, you're playing for your school, and no matter what happens, that's the truth. But it's hard to watch. It's hard when a team like Florida starts the way that they did, and then the South Carolina game, the Mizzou game. It's not fun. I like good football, and that's not what we're getting out of Gainesville.
Florida has lost 4 of their last 5.
Yep.
Thus far. Could have lost that Samford game. That was the only win.
Yeah.
Kind of wove it in there, and now they've got the Florida State game this week. I believe they're still a favorite, which is confounding to me, and some of our folks may want to look at. We will talk about that on the Solid Saturday stream. 2.5 the last time I saw it. The only other note that I have here, good news for Minnesota, Mo Ibrahim going to come back.
Hell yeah.
Mo Ibrahim was supposed to be kind of the featured bell cow, if you will, for Minnesota Golden Gophers in their ground attack. They have found a way to run without him, which has been a credit to the depth that PJ Fleck has been building up there. They've been pretty successful on the ground. That is the primary way they move the football. But Mo Ibrahim coming back for the 2022 season is a good story. Guy that we like, guy that we rooted for. Sucks that he got hurt, but get another crack at this, which is cool.
You want to answer some questions?
I am ready for some questions, Dan. Let's do it.
Congratulations, Skippy. You've got mail.
You've got mail on the Solid Verbal.
So at least once per week on our Patreon, over at verbowlers.com, we pay homage to the folks that write in, ask us questions. It's been a while since we did one publicly, though.
That's
with
true.
It being Black Friday, we thought we would give our fine Verballers a little gift here. We would answer some of the questions. These are questions, though, that did come from the Verballer community. Again, verballers.com, verballers.com, verballers.com is where you can go to find out more about how you can join the community, how you can get your questions answered, how you can be part of our Discord server and chat about games all day, every day, how you can get access to this show and all of our shows a little bit early, play games like Run the Board, play games like Winter Wonders, which I can't talk about yet. Also play other games and just be part of the growing teaming community that is our awesome Verballerhood. Where do you want to start?
Canadian LSU fan, what does the future hold for Ed Orgeron and Dan Mullen? I don't expect them to get head coaching jobs, but could they land a coordinator at a big school, land as a coordinator at a big school? We know Nick Saban loves reclamation projects.
Wow.
Dan Mullen, I think they're going to take their time, right? They're going to try to get jobs, but they got that nice buyout situation happening in their lives financially. And so, look, Dan Mullen loves looking at jobs. He always loves figuring out what his next job is. Has flirted with a number of jobs when he was at Mississippi State, and finally the Florida one and the Florida opening made a lot of sense. Ed Orgeron took that year off, if you remember, and just sort of laid low after not getting the USC job. And then he took the LSU job, I think, as an assistant head coach and defensive line coach.
Yep.
So I think both of these guys are going to be in demand. I don't know at this point if they're going to be seen as, Ed Orgeron's not a coordinator.
I was going to say, he's not a coordinator.
Dan Mullen, I think at this point he'll just be choosy about a job that he wants as a head coach, right? That maybe a middle tier, lower tier Power 5 gig when it opens up without the exact pressure of Florida, whether it's in the SEC, ACC, whatever. I think he's just going to wait. I think he's going to wait for a head job. And I think, Ed Orgeron, maybe he goes to the NFL and is a D-line coach for somebody. He's too valuable as a recruiter, I think, to just sit around. It's, he has the connection to Lane Kiffin, but I don't think Ed Orgeron's going back to Ole Miss. So he'll find a connection and he'll find a job somewhere, but I think it's going to be in that similar role that has been the situation with him, going back to assistant head coach, dogged recruiter, defensive line coach, be it at a high level. Would Alabama hire him as
sure.
an assistant head coach?
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely they would.
Yeah.
Absolutely they would, given his recruiting inroads within the conference. And, maybe one of them is is going to coast as an analyst somewhere. Probably not. I don't know why you would. I don't think either one of them was let go in some sort of dramatic way where they need to rebuild their image. Dan Mullen remained a good X's and O's coach. Remained a good quarterback developer. It's not like he fell off the map on the field. It's just the culture of Florida and the recruiting of Florida is not where the Gators and the administration wanted it to be. And so, no, I think both of these guys are going to be fine and they're just going to be choosy. They're just not going to get a huge job again, I don't think.
Yeah, I mean, to your point, Orgeron's not a coordinator. Orgeron's a recruiter and he's a line coach. And
right.
So could he catch on somewhere in that capacity? Yeah. Could you hire him at Texas? Okay.
Sure.
I mean,
yeah.
A lot
I don't know
of
what his relationship is like with Sark, but yeah.
A lot of schools in the Southeastern Conference would be, or the soon-to-be Southeastern Conference in the case of Texas,
yeah.
would love to get Orgeron. So, yeah, he can catch on somewhere. I don't know if he'll be in any great rush to do so. On the Mullen side, I think Mullen is probably better suited to be a coordinator. I don't know if he is that self-aware. My guess is no. He probably wants
right.
to catch on as a head coach somewhere. And he
yep.
will have another opportunity to do so. Certainly, if he wants to be a coordinator, there would be a lot of suitors because
Dan Mullen, pretty good on those coaches roundtable type shows.
He's good. He's a great talker.
Stuff.
He's a great
I
talker.
I could see him going media for a little while. Why
maybe
not?
If Stoops takes Florida, which I don't think is going to happen, but maybe if Bob Stoops decides to leave, he can just slide right in next to
sure.
Reggie and Brady and Matt Leiner.
Yeah.
But he'll have Let's opportunities. They'll both have opportunities before
yeah.
long.
Do we think Cincinnati would be ranked as high as they are by the committee? This is Sally. If they had an above or if they had an average season last year, also known as how much credit is the committee giving them this year because they were so good last year?
No, I think absolutely that's an important point.
It'd be foolish to think otherwise of any team. Yeah, everybody, I mean, it gets the benefit of the doubt because of our unconscious perceptions and biases of recent history.
For sure. Yeah. And the committee may say otherwise, but I think we know better. You can make the case for almost any team. You made the case for Clemson, right? You make the case for any of these blue bloods that have been at the top of the polls now for the last 5 years, that you just give them the benefit of the doubt. And even when we talk to Bill Connolly, our friend who does the SP Plus, about as analytical and black and white as you can get, even his formula takes into account how a team has done over the last 4 or 5 years, because it actually is a pretty good indicator for the strength of a team, just given the normal rhymes and rhythms of college football, the cycles with recruiting and whatnot. It's like a good way to actually measure how strong a program is. And so, no, the answer is no. They would not be ranked as highly if they did not perform at the level that they did last year and the year before.
Yeah. And that's, I think, it goes into the calculus, because these are the same players, right? This is Des Ritter. This is, what's his name? Sanders, Myjai Sanders on the outside along the edge, and Sauce Gardner, all these guys. They come in with reputations. You know, so much of college football and ranking, whether it's conscious or unconscious, is familiarity. And you're right. Cincinnati performed admirably against Georgia in the bowl game and came into the season with expectations that they have thus far, I think, largely met. And so that has to be part of it, that Cincinnati is playing up to the attention that they're receiving in large part. So
the important caveat here, and I'm sure there are some Notre Dame haters out there screaming at their car stereo saying, well, what about Notre Dame? Why does Notre Dame get the benefit of the doubt?
Right.
Notre Dame's played in the playoff, what, twice now? Got drilled both times.
Sure.
Notre Dame gets the benefit of the doubt because they're interesting and because they bring along a national audience. They are a very good team. And Notre Dame is getting to the point where they are pushing up on that top tier. They are not there yet. But from a talent standpoint, they are getting there. Notre Dame benefits from a bunch of things that Cincinnati doesn't. And so Cincinnati, for them, they've needed to build this thing brick by brick. I don't know if you got the sound, but...
Always. Always, always.
They've needed to build this thing brick by brick slowly over the course of time. And Luke Fickell's done a really good job.
Yeah. I mean, we look at Notre Dame and the last two games they played in 2020, blown off the field, right?
Here they are again.
Like Clemson and Alabama.
Six. I'm a Notre Dame fan. They're number six. They could get the playoff.
So that goes into it. That goes into it. Like, well, at least with Notre Dame, you got to show me. You got to show me. And the way Notre Dame started the season and the Wisconsin win looks better. The Wisconsin, you know, was a different team earlier on in the year. But you can say that about everybody. This is just guessing. I think the big picture is the committee ranks teams the way they want to rank teams.
Thank you.
I think that's an important thing to remember.
All right. Next question.
So if they want to put Notre Dame there. Okay. In the age of conference realignments and made-for-TV matchups, a la the college football playoff, what makes a good college football rivalry? Geographic proximity, memorably close games, status within the national conversation, or simply decades of shared history? Side note, feel as if you could also expand this into a series of off-season podcasts or a doctoral.
I like it.
So my answer first is yes, but Ty, What are the things that you look for in a particularly engaging, interesting college football rivalry?
I look for a cool trophy.
Always.
We talked about the old oaken bucket, the 12-inch, 6-pound barrel that is given to an otherwise innocuous matchup between Indiana and Purdue. Need the cool trophy. All right. Preferably a trophy with some story behind it, like the Territorial Cup, which I expanded upon on the previous show as well.
Sure.
I love having decades of shared history.
Always.
I think you need to have that shared history. That's important to me in terms of rivalry. And then the third component would obviously be a game where you've got something on the line, right? It's got to be a meaningful matchup. And I'm not talking about... I'm not talking about in terms of playoffs. I'm not talking about in terms of bowl implications or anything like that.
Okay.
But... such a history that is intertwined in a way that losing hurts, right? Up the road here for me is Lehigh Lafayette. Maybe the longest running rivalry in college sports.
It's bad blood. Taylor Swift's bad blood.
There's bad blood there, right? Both Lehigh and Lafayette have had horrible seasons. You're 2-win, 3-win teams. But if you lose to your opponent, that hurts. That's bulletin board material for the next year running. So the shared history that intertwines to the point that losing the game matters. Losing the game, winning the game is something you can recruit on. That meaningful matchup is what I am going for, whether it's the trophy, whether it's the history. However you get to the point of bad blood, I think bad blood is what I'm trying to say here. I need that bad blood in order to feel good about that rivalry from the outside.
So I like geographic proximity because there is that part of a rivalry where you are either an X family or a Y family, right? If you're in the Iron Bowl,
house divided,
you're an Alabama fight, right? You're an Alabama family, you're an Auburn family. You're an Oregon family, you're an Oregon State family, or Washington, because I think there's still crossover there. You're a USC family or a UCLA family, a Lehigh family, Lafayette family, probably to a lesser extent. So that's something that's interesting to me. Texas and Texas A&M. I like the idea of there being identity associated, right? There, if you're an A&M person, there is a stereotype of you compared to a UT person, both in positive and negative ways, right?
Sure.
I like that part of a rivalry. We're like, interesting. They're an A&M family? Okay. They're a Texas family? Okay. I like that. I like when the two teams take football as seriously, right? In terms of, we are spending money. We care. We are extending our pretty good coach, or even extending our average coach, because we care tremendously and we're hopeful and he recruits and whatever.
Right.
You get that with Alabama, Auburn. Both Alabama and Auburn say, we are serious football programs. You don't always, like, when you look at Oregon, Washington, Washington was under Chris Peterson, but they were sort of unserious with Jimmy Lake, sort of unserious in the 2000s or whatever. Same with Oregon State. They were unserious in the way that they spent money and the way that Oregon spent money. Not necessarily their fault, but it's not as fun in a rivalry game if one side of it is saying, we are all in, we want to win 9, 10, 11 games a year, we're spending money to do it, we're upgrading our facilities, we're upgrading our stadium. And the other school is like, yeah, football's fine, football's cool. And so that's something to me. And right. I like that with Cal Stanford. They're both sort of on the same page in terms of like how seriously they take football, where it's cool and it's fun, but they're not breaking the bank to pay a coach $10 million. $9 million in the case of Stanford, perhaps. But they're not doing things in quite the ruthless way that other major programs are doing it. So I like that, right? Clemson, South Carolina is fun, but South Carolina is not a serious program in the way that Clemson is. I apologize to our South Carolina listeners, but it could not have been a fun last few years as a Gamecock fan in this rivalry in the battle for the Palmetto State. So that's something I look for, and I like the bad blood. And I like bad blood in newer situations between teams.
I like bad blood in general. Just in general, when it comes to sports, if there's going to be a chippy matchup, tell me what channel.
Sure.
I'm in.
Like we've had in the revivalry, right? Between Gary Patterson and Art Briles way back when. Like we've had, you know, LSU and Texas A&M, where you have new bad blood. When you go back to USC and Stanford, the what's your deal between Jim Harbaugh and Pete Carroll. I like new bad blood all the same. And so there's a lot that goes into it, but I like the like house divided. And, you know, example would be, so Jody with an I went to Michigan, okay? Her cousin John, who's amazing, grew up a Michigan fan. For whatever reason, I don't know if he didn't get in, but he went to Michigan State, and now he's a Michigan State guy. And Jody cares so much more about the Michigan-Michigan State game than she cares about Ohio State, because she has family members. Her sister-in-law went to Michigan State. Her cousin and his wife met at Michigan State. So now there's this like underlying tension.
Yeah.
And you know, somebody posts a picture on Instagram of a kid wearing Michigan State stuff, and Jody says, psh, psh, audibly in Dolby 5.0 surround. I love that. I love the like, well, you only went there because brr, 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 brr.
Yeah, I love and I've seen this, you know, I mean, you've traveled more than I have to games, but I love when you go to, I was at a Georgia game. Maybe that's a good example. Maybe not. But
that's a good example of Georgia, Georgia Tech, not on the same plane.
On the same plane. But what I'm going for here is I like when you talk to somebody about a rival. They very clearly are not just tongue in cheek about their disdain for the program.
Right.
You know, it's like, oh, really? Georgia right. Tech. Oh, really? Michigan?
Yeah, they're cute. They're cute. Yeah.
And you could see there's a visceral reaction, mm-hmm. and they're not faking it. They're not playful with it. They genuinely don't like the
yeah,
opponent.
Of course.
That's what I'm going for when I like
Do you know what I like about Ohio State, Michigan? Ohio State, with like their fans, you know, they do like the red X instead of typing an M on like social media. And both Ryan Day and Urban Meyer say, oh, that team up north instead of saying Michigan. And they've dominated that rivalry. And yet they have the details. They have the approach to the rivalry in much more detailed, hateful ways than Michigan has. Whereas Ohio State could say, like, it's not much of a rivalry anymore. Whatever. They're cute. Michigan in their citrus bowls and their Outback bowls or something like that. But they maintain that focus.
They know their base. They know their base.
They know their base.
You got to know. You got to know your base. And yeah,
I appreciate that.
I do, too. Great question. So, who asked that? Yeah. Sally? You say Sally asked that?
No, Paul asked that question.
I'm sorry, Paul. Great
Paul
question.
Asked that question.
Why don't we do one more, and then it's going to be Patreon exclusive time.
Patreon exclusive. Okay. Well, there's another Dan Mullen question. We've spent a lot of time on Dan Mullen. Vaughn, which mascot should have its own balloon in the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade?
Oh, I mean, it's Sparty.
I had that similar thought. I had a similar thought because Sparty is that good mix of sort of powerful looking, he's strong, whatever, but also cartoonish.
You need right? the powerful, comically, like a caricature mm-hmm. style mascot that you can put on the balloon. So
now
I think it's Sparty. It's got to be Sparty.
Now I hear you. So technically, Virginia Tech and the Hokies a turkey. Or a turkey-ish character.
But they already
of some
have
kind.
It's a Thanksgiving Day parade.
I understand.
Macy's already has the turkey thing squared away. We don't need another turkey, like a cool new spin on a turkey, especially one without a head coach.
What about the tree, though? Because, right, it's the holidays. You got the big googly eyes. It's silly. And you have cartoon characters. The Stanford tree. The problem with the Stanford tree is not recognizable in a mainstream way. Right?
No.
Like the Stanford alumni base is just, they're not as numbered, they're not as passionate about college football and mascots. That to me is a problem. But like if you look at the most cartoonish mascots, I mean, Purdue Pete would be fun in there. The Big Ten really carries itself in a strong way. God, across the SEC.
Pistol Pete would be decent.
It's Harry something. Harry Dog is the Georgia one.
Yeah, I could see that.
I like it. Fine. Oski at Cal, but again, not the same recognizability.
What about Buddy at Nebraska?
Very lends itself very well to a parade. I think the Big Ten mascot collective. By the way, I hate the Penn State mascot. Whatever that like weird old fashioned costume is. Hate it.
Okay.
Cartoon it up a little bit. Come on.
Sure. I don't disagree.
You know what? But I would also say Brutus. I think Brutus would acquit him or herself. I'm not sure where we're gendering Brutus, but Brutus tends to be a male name. I think Brutus would do well as a Thanksgiving Day
Big
parade
oval
mascot.
Buckeye head. Yeah.
Yeah.
Very
Brutus
strong.
Or Sparty would be my final answer.
Very strong collective.
So. There's that cartoonish puffy Buddy with Nebraska, I think, is another good answer. I don't know if is the Big 12, you know, maybe the Frog a little bit. I'm always thrown off by mascots wearing football uniforms, though. That's not my full thing. I mean, Syracuse, the orange, pretty good.
Local
to New York.
Yeah.
Big Red. You know, they're good options out there. I'm going to go Sparty or Brutus would be my finalist.
I think Sparty, and I'll go Buddy number two, but definitely a Big Ten.
The duck is right there.
The duck
got the
cool.
Disney recognizability with Donald. Yeah, you have to throw the duck in that conversation.
All right. Final question, Dan. Give me one more question.
One more question.
Make it a good one. This has to be a good one.
Which coaches need to complete the drive for six the most this week?
Ooh, what a question.
So you want the list of schools that are on the road for the drive for six? Mike Norvell would be a good answer.
Give me the list.
Right?
Give me the list.
Okay, so you have Ball State, you have San Jose State. San Jose State had last year, they're fine. South Alabama, Florida and Florida State, so I'd put Mike Norvell in there. I would think actually Greg Schiano at Rutgers, it'd be a nice story for Rutgers to make a bowl with their ascent. Charlotte, ODU, Troy, Hawaii, you get Todd Graham and his headgear in a bowl game. Virginia Tech's an interim situation. Phil Montgomery at Tulsa, which is actually a pretty impressive back half of their schedule. Syracuse would be important to me. Dino getting to a bowl after the depths to which Syracuse fell post-grungy Eric Dungy, who, by the way, grungy Eric Dungy on Cameo, almost got you an Eric Dungy cameo for your birthday.
What's he getting for a cameo?
It's not especially expensive.
Okay, that's good. That's probably for the best.
$25, yeah. But I think Dino Babers and Mike Norvell would be my answer. I would center around the ACC, possibly Greg Schiano as a proof of concept as Rutgers continues to play hard.
Well, you stole my answer with Mike Norvell, but okay. I don't know if he needs to.
It would just be very helpful for Florida State to get that time in those practices.
Yeah, he doesn't need to. Like, need to almost implies that if he doesn't, right, that coach is going to get canned. That is certainly not the situation with Mike Norvell. You know, like, I've waxed poetic about the job he's done after a really bad start. But for sure, it would be very meaningful. It'd be very meaningful for him to be able to go out on the recruiting trail and tell the story about how they put the thing back together. They got it back on the tracks. You know, I mean, it's been a rocky start for him. Even dating back to last year, there was some of the stuff in the offseason, you remember. The fact that he has now rebuilt this thing and has some momentum, I think, is really just a great story. So Norvell's the answer for me. He doesn't need to, but what he'd be able to do with that, I think, would be really, really significant to the health of that program moving forward.
Yeah, I would also. Yeah, I mean, I think Dino needs it. That's that. You know, if you're talking needs, getting the final win. Syracuse has Pitt. Oh, that's tricky. But it's in the Carrier Dome. I don't have the sound, but as we know, the Carrier Dome is where good teams go to die. But Pitt has already clinched the division, so all good.
All good. All right,
that's
Dan.
That's my answer.
Robert
asks.
By the way,
we have lots of amazing questions that we're saving for the Patreon portion of this one, the extended version. A lot of Thanksgiving questions, a lot of coaching hypotheticals, carousel questions, gift guide questions. Ty has some controversial takes. Mm-hmm. I'm going to say that right now.
Robert asks, what would a Moneyball approach to a Power Five program
let's get into that.
Look like? What schools are most apt to pull this off? The question around the U.S. soccer comparison combined with last week's podcast got me thinking about these kinds of comparisons. So we're talking Moneyball, we're talking college football, and we're talking about that over on our Patreon, Dan.
Love it.
Which
what
you
a
can
tease.
Find at verballers.com. Verballers.com is how you can access that specialized content. Talk a little Moneyball and college football, a topic that is near and dear to both our hearts. Mm-hmm. You can also get access to the video feed of this here show. You can get access to all of our shows a little bit early, be part of the Discord community, play in our games, all sorts of fun stuff that you will have at your disposal as a trusted Verballer. Again, it is verballers.com, verballers.com. Don't forget to tune into the stream. SolidSaturday.com is where you get access to the stream that we do 11 a.m. Eastern time every Saturday morning. Get you ready for kickoff. This week, we will obviously be looking back a bit at what transpired on Friday. Today, we'll also be looking back on the Egg Bowl and getting you prepped for some of the big action of the Saturday, the game between Ohio State and Michigan. We got Bedlam. We got a bunch of big games that are going down. The Iron Bowl, maybe not as significant, just given where Auburn's at, but always a fun rivalry to handicap. So we'll talk through that and much, much more. And last but certainly not least, go on out to our website, solidverbal.com. There you can find the articles that we post on an ongoing weekly basis, 3 a week, from Travis, from Connor, and from Bradley. You can also find all the links to our previous episodes. If you like what you heard, please do subscribe. And last but not least, solidgiveaway.com. Throw your hat in the ring, get a chance to win an RG3 signed mini helmet, Dan.
Yeah, agree.
Enjoy your weekend. We will talk tomorrow, okay?
Yeah, let's keep this show going, though, for the special folks.